a production of South Dakota Public Broadcasting.
Good morning. I want to call to order the Senate Health and Human Services Committee. I want to welcome all of you that are attending and to our home listening audience. Just a reminder, if you're going to provide any testimony today, we ask you to please sign in. Also, please turn your cell phones off. And with that, I'll have the secretary call the roll.
Bradford.
Here.
Holeen. Krebs.
Here.
Rampelberg.
Here.
Schleckaway.
Here.
Kraus. Hunhoff.
Here.
We have a quorum. Thank you. I see we have one page in the room. If you want to come up and turn the green light on, and please introduce yourself and say where you're from.
My name is Joey Konofshinsky, and I live here in Pierre.
Great. Thank you very much, and thank you for all you do in helping us. With that, before we move into our agenda items, I do have a request from the first entertain a motion to act on the minutes from the last meeting.
Second.
Moved by Senator Krebs, seconded by Senator Rampelberg. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. Motion carried. Thank you. With that, I do have a request from the governor for introduction of a bill. It would be an act to allow for the redistribution of existing nursing home facility beds. I'd entertain a motion to introduce.
So moved.
Second. Moved by Senator Rappenberg, seconded by Senator Bradford. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. Motion carried. Thank you. With that, this morning we have two items on our agenda, and I'm not going to reverse the order. I see our senator has arrived. Senator, we are just now moving to Senate Bill 121, which expands Medicaid eligibility for pregnant women and to make an appropriation thereof. Good morning, Senator.
I'm Senator Stan Adelstein from District 32. In Rapid City, where it's already 32 degrees and it's going to be 50 before the day is out. The bill that I bring, I brought before. It's a bill about life and a very pro-life bill. We have much discussion in this body about the unborn and the newborn. You'll hear presented to you facts that will indicate that historically 10 children die before they're born or before because of the lack of prenatal care. The lack of prenatal care does not mean that it's a careless mother. It means that they could not afford the cost of this treatment. I've heard discussion in this body frequently, how much is one life worth? This money, as you know, will be matched by federal funds. We now have reached a place where we have something of a surplus. What better use for the surplus than saving lives? Not only do you save lives, but a significant number of children are born with handicaps. A significant number of women have lifetime health problems, all of which could be prevented by this very simple expenditure, an expenditure that we can afford, and in a sense, we cannot afford not to do. I'll end my testimony now. I'll come back for rebuttal if necessary, because I want you to hear from those that are specialists and qualified in this field. Thank you very much, Madam Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Adelstein. Other proponents? Good morning and welcome.
Good morning, Senator Hunhoff and members of the committee. I'm pleased to be here this morning, and indeed we have a beautiful view out the windows behind you. Need to warm up here and then I will progress.
Please identify yourself.
Yes, my name is Ann Wilson. I am a professor at South Dakota State University, but as my slide will rapidly present here, I am representing myself, and in no way are the views that I express those that are supported or endorsed by the Board of Regents. We are here today to talk about Senate Bill 121, and as I just mentioned, my remarks reflect those of my personal and professional judgment and not those of my employer. In South Dakota, In South Dakota, I have tracked the infant mortality rate as well as the health of babies that joined the citizenship of this state in publications that began in 1987. The most recent one was published this month by the South Dakota Journal of Medicine, and it has been my privilege and honor over the years to track the realities that come with the births of babies in South Dakota. South Dakota, we face the sad reality that about 80 babies per year are currently dying during their first year of life. I also spent the first 26 years of my career in South Dakota, as you can see what I look like here in the 70s, following the outcome of babies as they left the neonatal intensive care that looked like this in the mid-1970s. I had the joy of watching many babies grow to become healthy, happy children who approached kindergarten well-equipped to succeed in school. I also observed many babies leave the intensive care unit with problems that accompanied their future lives and created costs for not only society as a whole, for the educational system, but also played important emotional losses for the families as they continue to provide care for those babies. In South Dakota, we have about 133 babies born each year that weigh less than 3.5 pounds. And on Saturday, the day before yesterday, at the Legislative Coffee in Sioux Falls, we heard from Senator Peters, who served on the summer study on Medicaid, report that the highest expenditure of Medicaid funds goes to pay for the costs of neonatal intensive care. This is a very costly treatment for sick babies and those that are born too early and who are too tiny to survive without the miraculous care that's now available through neonatal sources of medical care, but also are exceedingly costly. Back in the early 1980s, I became aware and it became apparent to me that babies were arriving in the neonatal intensive care without having prenatal care. This was a great concern to me, and I did a study at that time that identified over a two-year period of time 8 babies who were admitted for neonatal intensive care. They went on to have costs in $1980 of $500,000, which is a fraction of what that would be today. However, when one of those babies went on to have a $100,000 hospital stay and then died in the second year of life, one lived with significant and costly developmental sequelae, and one baby with developmental delays died in a preventable home injury. I estimated at that time that half of the expenditures for those 8 babies would have covered prenatal care costs for all of the women in 1983 who did not receive care. Then, later in the 1980s, I did a study for the State Health Department that examined prenatal care of babies that were admitted to the neonatal intensive care unit. The outcome of that study showed about a 2-to-1 return on savings of neonatal costs had those women had prenatal care prior to the birth of the babies requiring neonatal intensive care. Other studies have gone on to show about a 3-to-1 return in costs for prenatal care. South Dakota needs a strong, healthy, well-educated workforce to assure its economic development. And this workforce begins when babies are conceived and when they are appropriately cared for during the 9 months prior to their birth that hopefully is healthy. This bill, Senate Bill 120, would expand Medicaid coverage for women in South Dakota. What it essentially would do would provide for babies the same Medicaid coverage prior to their birth that they will receive once they are born. Shouldn't babies receive the same medical care during their gestation that they will receive upon the time of their birth? As a four-year-old, this young child knew that the only way you reach a baby before their birth is through the prenatal care that the mother receives during her pregnancy. And interestingly, the state of South Dakota in the last decade has had two commissions take a look at infant mortality. The first, which functioned in year 2006 and published its report in 2007, clearly identified the importance of prenatal care. Indeed, its first recommendation was to achieve an infant mortality rate of 6.0 by 2010 by developing a media campaign directed at helping women know they are pregnant and the importance of not smoking in prenatal care. That was their first recommendation. The year 2010 has come and gone, and actually the infant mortality rate increased between the year 2006 and 2010 and did not achieve the goal of that commission in 2006. Now, indeed, fluctuations in infant mortality rates in South Dakota occur because of our small base of births, but nonetheless, the goal was not achieved. And in the year 2010, we have an infant mortality rate that's higher than that observed nationally. Last summer, another task force was created by the governor and chaired by First Lady Dugard. Their report was published last month. Their first recommendation, again, was for prenatal care. And the first recommendation was to improve access to early, comprehensive prenatal care. Here we are. They have the bill in front of us that will do that. Clearly, Senate Bill 121 will improve access to prenatal care by removing a financial barrier to prenatal care. This is the bill that's before you that I certainly hope you will support, recognizing its cost effectiveness. In South Dakota, approximately 71% of all women receive care during their first trimester, 5% during the final trimester of pregnancy, and less than 1% receive no care. If we take a look at the parameters that affect the health of babies following that first year of life, we recognize that about 7% of South Dakota babies are born low birth weight. Of that group, 19% had no or less than 5 prenatal care visits. And overall, about 8 to 10% of all newborns require costly neonatal intensive care. There are 10 babies who end up in neonatal intensive care. Neonatal intensive care, as I was able to identify 20 years ago, is costly. And, of course, that cost continues to rise as the intensity of that care and the kinds of treatments babies now receive are provided. The average cost generally for neonatal intensive care is about $3,000 a day. That figure, of course, will vary depending upon the part of the nation and the intensity of the needed care. Generally, about 75% of all newborn care is devoted to that received in neonatal intensive care units. Yet for every baby who received prenatal care and died, there were 9 deaths of babies who did not receive prenatal care. Let's take a look at the infant mortality rates by the timing of prenatal care, and it soon becomes apparent how much more frequently and higher the death rate is for babies who had no prenatal care versus those who received it during their mother's first trimester of pregnancy. In South Dakota, currently over a third of all babies are on Medicaid, 55% are on private insurance, and about 2% are self-pay. Again, let's look at the mortality rates based upon the source of payment for prenatal care. The self-pay babies have a mortality rate that's about twice that of those babies that have private insurance, and it's higher than those who receive Medicaid. So, as you take a look at this bill, please recognize that it will provide coverage for babies equal to that they will receive once they're born, and that coverage is vital for their health, and it's cost-effective and will more than likely save the expenditure in reduced costs for neonatal intensive care. We must also be honest and recognize that excellent prenatal care does not always mean that a baby will be healthy. and more than financial coverage of care is necessary to assure its utilization. Certainly, this issue is one that we don't just achieve with money, but it must reflect the energy, the love, the compassion, and the support that families and communities engage and invest in a pregnancy. Private and public resources are needed to provide wise, effective, and prudent care that will have a profound effect upon the future and the welfare of all who live in South Dakota. Please support this bill for South Dakota and its future. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any questions for Dr. Wilson? Senator Rampelberg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was on the summer study this year, and the numbers that Senator Peters mentioned, I was also on appropriations last year, and I've seen those, and I know you are correct. A lot of time was spent this summer talking about how to encourage women to avail themselves of prenatal care. And it seemed as if, from the testimony, that it was very difficult to convince a number of these people who are high risk to avail themselves of that. And I guess I have two questions for you. One is, do you have some mechanisms or something in mind other than a media campaign that might encourage more women to do this? And number two, let me back up a little bit, preference from number two. It also seems to me that these babies are covered already under Medicaid because that's what, as Senator Peter said, whether we have a good year or not depends on how many babies are in neonatal care. And it's crazy, but from a Medicaid standpoint. So what is not being covered that this bill would cover?
Okay. Let me, first of all, you had two questions, and if I can get them straight, let me start with the first one, which is an exceedingly vital issue, and it nails one of the dynamics that unfortunately money can't necessarily impact, but certainly can help. That is the issue of prenatal care might be available. A woman might even have an insurance card or a Medicaid card, but they do not seek it. And that is an issue that relates to systems and communities and approaches and a variety of other dynamics that makes that care welcoming. And I'm not sure that a media campaign is the approach, but the connections through other social services that can engage a woman in a supportive conversation and perhaps can minimize some of the other stresses so that she could pay attention to herself and get the care that she and her baby need. That's my response to that issue. The second issue is that what this bill would do would be expand eligibility. The bill asks for a dollar amount that would expand eligibility so that women who are currently at 133% of poverty are qualified for prenatal care under Medicaid. This would expand the eligibility so that those whose income is somewhat higher but still low would receive the benefit of Medicaid for prenatal care, which currently is not available to them. Yes, indeed, once the baby is born, the baby is covered, but that doesn't include prenatal care for the mother during the pregnancy and the baby's gestation.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, let me see if I got this straight now. So, well, first of all, a side comment. One of the things that I found impressive is certain of the systems in our state are doing a good job of trying to encourage women to come together and different methods of working with women. And I'm not sure how you're going to do that. I'm just saying that's a side comment. But here's the issue. Are you saying then that this bill, because it seems to me this bill focuses on money, but there's kind of a nebulous comment about something is going to do something different. Well, my question is, even though you change the eligibility of it, are you not then going to change the eligibility of what we've agreed upon within Medicaid in a general sense? So you're talking about a specific change in eligibility having to do with pregnant women for care, prenatal care, right? So this is a change to what we're doing in Medicaid what we already have in place with eligibility rules. We'll change the eligibility rules. I'm getting into it now. We'll change the eligibility rules for this section of people, pregnant women.
It would widen the eligibility so that women who are at a higher income, although albeit a low income, would qualify for prenatal care under Medicaid that currently do not receive that benefit because of their income. They have an income beyond 133% of the poverty level, which is the current minimum at the federal level. So South Dakota offers the lowest level that's demanded at the federal level. This would expand it up to, I believe, 200% of the poverty level.
Did you have Senator Krause?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a question, please.
Sure.
The way that I read this, Section 1, it says to expand for pregnant women. So I would read that to mean all pregnant women, no matter what their income is, no matter what insurance, that Medicaid would pay for this service, pregnancy-related services for all women. Is that correct?
I can't speak to the technicalities or the logistics of the specific language within the bill. My reading of the bill is that it does provide a dollar figure to expand eligibility for prenatal care through Medicaid. And so that would imply to me that they would need to qualify for Medicaid.
Thank you.
All right. Okay, Senator Rambo, we're going to have other speakers, so I'll allow you the flexibility for one more question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Actually, Madam Chair, I probably should save this for later, but I'm wondering who will promulgate the rules because I don't see that in here. And you may not answer that. Let us wait until we see someone else or hear from someone else. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Wilson. Other proponents? Good morning and welcome.
Senator Hunhoff and members of the committee, my name is Dennis Stevens. I am trained and board certified in both the practice of pediatrics and neonatal perinatal medicine. I've had over 30 years of experience and have cared for over 16,000 babies, of which we speak here in the state of South Dakota, since 1980. I also serve as professor of pediatrics and the interim chair of the Department of Pediatrics of the Sanford School of Medicine, and I'm currently the medical director of the Buckelhyde Intensive Care Nursery. I also had the privilege last year of serving on Governor Dugard's task force on infant mortality. The opinions expressed this morning are my own and do not represent either the state of South Dakota, the Board of Regents, or Sanford Health. Excuse my low-tech presentation, but sometimes paper just works better. In my mind, the issue of prenatal care is very closely tied to survival and the short and long-term health care needs of babies. From my personal experience, I'm convinced that the evidence of a cost savings of 2.5 to 3.5 times the expenditure on neonatal care are made up by early prenatal care of the mother. I believe that these savings are even greater today than those outlined previously by Dr. Wilson or those that appear in the literature because of the expanded capabilities that we have at this point in time for use of technology to identify problems in the fetus and referral for treatment and management and possibly the prevention of preterm labor and preterm delivery. Even if we can delay the delivery of an extremely preterm baby, we may experience the savings of tens or hundreds of thousands of dollars by holding off on that delivery by a few weeks. Our own data indicate worse outcomes in babies who are not delivered in the perinatal center. So if we have a mother cared for in the perinatal center who delivers down the hall from the neonatal intensive care unit, we have much better outcomes than if we have to send an air transport team out across the state to do the stabilization in a less equipped facility to bring that baby into the neonatal intensive care unit and then pick up from that point on, with all other factors remaining the same. So just that one circumstance makes significant difference. From my own review of the data for South Dakota, indicates a decline in early prenatal care between the years of 2000 and 2008. We are currently 10 percentage points below the national goal of 78% of mothers receiving prenatal care in the first trimester by 2010. In 2008, less than half of our Native American mothers in the state of South Dakota received early prenatal care. Over the past 10 years, as outlined by Dr. Wilson, the South Dakota infant mortality rate has exceeded the national rate. Our rate among our American Indian babies is over twice the rate for Caucasian babies in the state. In fact, the rate for the American Indian babies in South Dakota exceeds the rate for American Native babies across the nation by about twice the rate. I've personally witnessed and cared for babies as small as 23 to 24 weeks gestation. Full gestation is 40 weeks gestation, whose mothers had no prenatal care. These babies, as mentioned earlier, often require transport to the perinatal center, aggressive intensive care, including the use of mechanical ventilation, blood transfusion, IV fluids, hyperalimentation, and they often have ongoing medical costs and developmental costs going far beyond the time of hospitalization. Current rates for care of extremely low birth weight babies in this range may be as high as $10,000 per day for the initial part of the hospital course, with it not being uncommon for total hospital bills to exceed a half to $1 million. In consideration of these factors, it would not take many very low birth weight baby births being prevented to fund the entirety of the bill being proposed today. I'd also like to go back to the governor's task force data and the information presented previously by Dr. Wilson, indicating that with early prenatal care, there are approximately 5.8 infant deaths per 1,000 live births in the state of South Dakota. With no prenatal care, that rate goes from 5.8 to 46.4 per 1,000. So just another indication of the differences in no prenatal care. The very first recommendation of the governor's task force on infant mortality was to improve access to early comprehensive prenatal care. Senate Bill 121 will help South Dakota to achieve this recommendation and provide the resources whereby to accomplish that recommendation. Thank you.
Thank you, Doctor. Are there any questions? I have one. In your practice and your experience, is access the main reason for the lack of prenatal care on these babies that you treat in neonatal as a common, or are there other factors that are leading them to end up in the units?
Nothing that we do in neonatal intensive care has a single simple answer. These are all very multifactorial situations. I think frequently cost of care is an issue getting in, and there is a gap here between this 132 and 200% of the poverty level. But there are frequently other social factors that need to be addressed statewide. This bill, as I understand, will only provide the financial resources to try to bridge that gap.
Senator Bradford.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, there's a couple things here that I wonder if you have some statistics for me. What percentage of, when you mention, and they're used a lot in the Medicaid situation, Native American pregnancies, it's high. Do you have any idea, or could you give me an idea of what percent of them are off the reservation or on the reservation, or do we include all them?
I don't have those data to provide you.
Okay.
We track, racial background in our babies, but I don't have data.
The point I'm trying to get at is that we definitely want everybody to get this, but most of those Native American pregnancies, I think, are already eligible. That's why I'm wondering if it's a situation of where they, and believe me, I've seen young pregnancies that absolutely didn't want anybody to know they were pregnant, let alone a doctor. So what I'm trying to get at is, are we going to really reach who we're striving to reach here, is what I'm trying to put. I'm just trying to get a handle on it, sir.
I think I can respond from my personal experience, and I hate to generalize that this is an issue of any one population, but I can think of numerous situations in my personal experience where these are not only Native babies, these are not only babies from reservations, these are Caucasian babies from all over the state. So, I mean, this is something that affects everybody.
Well, follow up, the point I'm trying to get at is we use them to emphasize the higher rate. So if we're going to use them to emphasize a higher rate, then we need to really look into what the problem is for them. And too much we generalize and then just throw them in as a bigger factor. So I'm just telling you that I really would like to see a really good study done so that we know what we're dealing with. Not that I don't disagree with the need, absolutely.
I think the data indicates that the need is statewide. I mean, our infant mortality rate across the entire population is high. Dr. Wilson's data indicate that, the data presented by the governor's task force. And certainly the governor's task force has made other recommendations and other suggestions for ways to try to study some of these issues. And if I can just comment in regard to Senator Raffelberg's question earlier, one of the trials that was brought up is possible implementation of a program known as Centering for Prenatal Care, at least as a pilot program, which is aware in which groups of mothers are brought in not for an individual obstetrical appointment, but for a group appointment, which is also associated with educational activities at the same time. This could be a way, if successful in pilot studies, where groups of mothers could be brought in. They would have a natural social support network that would encourage coming back for prenatal care and would also provide an educational opportunity that would go beyond the delivery, the birth of the infant, but also provide education in regard to care during that first year of life, appropriate sleeping methods, those types of things, immunizations, hopefully that could impact that infant mortality rate. So these are some other recommendations that are out there, but certainly a very, very financially and socially complex issue.
Thank you. Are there other proponents? Good morning. Welcome.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I'm Greg Boris. I'm the registered lobbyist for South Dakota Voices for Children. And as Senator Edelstein mentioned earlier, this is a bill that's been before you several times, or before various committees several times, and we appreciate being heard on it again today. The number one priority in the governor's report from the Infant Mortality Task Force dealt with access. And there's a lot of different aspects to access. Access can be geographic. Access can be attitudinal. And access is also economic. And we've talked about, and you've asked questions about those various things this morning. This bill addresses the economic access piece. No one approach, in my mind, is that silver bullet that will drastically lower the infant mortality rate, the longer gestation, increasing the gestation period of children who are in the NICU. We have to go at it in a multiple approach manner. What we have heard this morning is that when we invest on quality prenatal care, one of the things that we see is better birth outcomes. It may not be that the child may not end up in the NICU, but they may be held in utero longer, and that leads to less invasive treatment, but more cost savings. So when we look at this bill, again, as Dr. Wilson said, we're talking about expanding the coverage from 133% to 200% of the federal poverty level, so that the coverage for the expectant mother for pregnancy-related issues is equal to that of the child once the child is born. The rules, as I understand it, would be pretty much the same for what we have under 133% now. So I'm not sure under Senator Rampelberg's comments about what would be the promulgation rules. I think we already have rules in the area. It's just a different number that we're talking about. I would encourage you to support this bill and have it move on through the process so others can consider it as well. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Any questions? Next, welcome.
I don't know if these chairs are big enough anymore. Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Dean Krogman, I represent South Dakota State Medical Association. Dr. Haim Ganat said, who is deceased now, once said that when you're dealing with decision makers, define the problem, what needs to be done to fix it, and it's okay to say how you feel about it. The problem really has been defined for a lot of years. The statistics are compelling. Even the 5.8 per thousand all the way up to 40 per thousand in infant mortality has got to be compelling. And in defining the problem, that is because of the individuals getting pre- and postnatal care. Now, in defining the problem, who does not get the care? The most obvious ones are the ones that can't afford it. That is our Medicaid population. So I think the problem's been defined. I think cost savings has been documented. I think there is no question that it's time to start, if you're serious about infant mortality, with all the discussion, it's time to move forward with this. I can't think of a reason not to. Now, how do I feel about it? Just me. I think it's wrong to cut matching federal spending for Medicaid. That's water over the bridge. I know that. But that is available money to do what we should be doing for the people that can't do it for themselves. I'd appreciate your support for the bill.
Thank you. Other proponents?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Rebecca Craddock, representing the South Dakota Association of Healthcare Organizations. I could do 15 minutes, but I'm not going to, because I'd be repeating what you've already heard very well stated. So I would just here to ask for your support for Senate Bill 121.
Thank you. Other proponents? Any other proponents to Senate Bill 121? Are there any more proponents? Seeing none, are there opponents? Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Rachel Byram. I'm with the Bureau of Finance and Management. I'm testifying today in opposition to Senate Bill 121. Before I begin, just to offer a clarification, this bill doesn't specify what eligibility level to expand to, but given the appropriation, it would allow the Department of Social Services to expand from 133% of the federal poverty level to 175%. Last session, we asked the legislature to make difficult cuts across state government, including the Medicaid program, to deal with the budget crisis we are facing for fiscal year 2012. As we cautiously plan for fiscal year 2013, we've asked everyone to sustain cuts made in fiscal year 2012 and refrain from adding new programs or expanding current programs. Additionally, with the uncertainty surrounding health care reform and the potential budget implications from expanding Medicaid eligibility, it's not a good time to expand the Medicaid program. We recognize the need for increased prenatal care among pregnant women in South Dakota, and through the recommendations made by the Governor's Task Force on Infant Mortality, we're able to leverage federal funding and other funding and hope to improve prenatal care access and birth outcomes for pregnant women across South Dakota. For these reasons, I respectfully ask the committee to defer Senate Bill 121 to the 41st day. Thank you, and I'll stand by for any questions.
Thank you. Are there any questions? Okay, seeing none, thank you. Are there any other opponents? Any other opponents? Senator Bradford, do you have for Rachel? Okay, do you want to come back?
If, let's say we pass this bill and it went into effect, would it affect Medicaid dollars in any other areas? Would we have less for those other areas? That's what I'm saying, that are under Medicaid now.
Madam Chair, Senator Bradford, theoretically you would have reduced neonatal care costs, assuming that additional women were cared for prenatally. I think that would be the right way to say that. But we're not able to accurately project and quantify that. So.
Senator Krause.
Thank you, Senator Hunhoff. I have a question for you regarding Senator Bradford's point that he made earlier. Could you confirm what he alluded to, that Native Americans would already be covered with free prenatal care? Is that true?
Madam Chair, Senator Krause, I believe Native Americans are covered through IHS.
Thank you. And one other follow-up. Go ahead, Senator.
Senator Bradford.
Madam Chair, the Native American that's off the reservation is not covered by IHS, so I guess we're more speaking to them.
That's correct.
Senator Krause, do you have a follow-up?
Yes, I do. Thank you. Rachel, could you tell me if we were to make this change, and if the Health Care Accountability Act is enacted, is found constitutional by the Supreme Court, would this change be frozen in place? Would we be able to revert from this change at a later date?
Madam Chair, Senator Krause, we would be able to go back down to the current federal poverty level. However, under health care reform, it would increase from 133% to 138%. But if on December 31st of 2013 we are at 175%, we are ineligible for the enhanced FMAP for the additional 5% portion that's required.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions? Okay. Thank you. Last time, are there any other opponents? Seeing none, Senator Adelstein, I'll allow you a rebuttal.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. I must say, thank you, Madam Chairman. I must say this has been the most exhaustive discussion we've had of this bill
And I thank this committee. It's certainly the chairman, vice chairman, and all of its members. Let me answer the first question, which was very significant that both Senator Krause and Senator Rampelberg alluded to. That has to do with the issue of all women. What this does, and say the third time I've had this bill, and I used to have in it the percentage that would be increased, I did this time a lump sum because I'm not sure with the changing dollars that I could determine the percentage the department will be if fortunately we pass this bill. What there is the sum of $2,600,000 to expand the eligibility. That's not subject to any rules. The money simply goes into the fund, and because there is more money there, the eligibility will be increased from the 133, which is the lowest in the nation and the lowest permitted. Now, whether we'll go to 175, as Rachel suggested, or 200, as some of the others suggested, I don't know exactly what that number is. All I do know is that this investment will do two things. It will save lives, and it will reduce the cost of prenatal care. I've discussed with Dr. Ben, in who is an academically trained and former research physician in neonatal care. There's no question that a significant part of, maybe a major portion, of neonatal care is due to lack of adequate prenatal care. The off-reservation issue is very, very significant. In Rapid City, and I would suppose in Sioux Falls, I don't know in Rapid City, having been a hospital board chairman, many, many pregnant women who have problems will come to their families in Rapid City. We have a significant population. In my faith, Hillel once said, a person who saves one life saves the whole world, because there were only one person in the very beginning. And I believe that this opportunity that the bill provides to save lives is very, very significant. And I would hope that you would pass it, as Mr. Croman said very well. There are cost savings, in my mind, at least equal to half of the $2.6 million state dollars, in my mind, from what Dr. Wilson presented. So then if we're only going to spend $1,300,000 more, my goodness, what's a life worth? So I would hope you'll pass this bill. Let's get it down to the floor. If you want more clarification on exactly what the eligibility will be, we'll get some of that research done before it gets there. Let's pass the bill out finally. Let's say that we are really concerned about the lives of babies and the health of mothers. Thank you very much, Madam Chairman, for allowing me. I think you gave me a little more time than I should have been given, but I'm grateful.
Thank you, Senator. Because of the topic, I'll allow if there's any questions here that have come to light, if anyone has any. Senator Bradford.
Could I have the lady from the finance? Thank you, Madam Chair. And this, I appreciate what Senator Adelstein has said. And I do think this deserves a lot of time. We're talking about lives. And believe you me, I want to do everything I can to save those lives, because it's I had a granddaughter that had to be flown out of Pine Ridge to Rapid City for life saving at her birth. So I know what this is all about. But what the other thing I want to ask you is financially, if you know. When we say this in these dollars, are those federal dollars automatic? Will we automatically just get those? or do we have to ask for them, or how does that work? I don't think any of us really realizes how that match money comes down.
Well, Madam Chair, Senator Bradford, under the federal medical assistance percentage, which is tied to Medicaid, for every dollar the state spends, the federal government pitches in a certain percent, approximately. We pay about 40%. They pay about 60% for every dollar spent in Medicaid.
The follow-up is then that automatically, if we put this in, the federal dollars will come.
Madam Chair, Senator Bradford, automatically, if we spend that money, the federal dollars will be there.
Thank you. Okay, with that, I will close to public testimony and open it up for discussion or action by the committee.
Madam Chair.
Senator Krause.
Madam Chair, I would move Senate Bill 121 to the 41st day.
Sarah, second.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded by Senator Krause and Senator Krebs to move Senate Bill 121 to the 41st day. Comments on that motion?
Yes, thank you. This is a difficult bill to speak against. I'm very much for mothers, of course, as we all are, and we listen to the infant mortality report from the governor's wife, very well done, presenting the data that shows us that we do need to be very aware of this in our state. But I have a few reasons why I made this motion, and it's with trepidation. Number one, as our governor's wife, Linda Dugard, reported, they have the Infant Mortality Task Force, which met a number of days and had very wide representation across the state from healthcare professionals. They have six recommendations to improve infant mortality in our state. And I'm just concerned if we implement these six recommendations, and we have ideas in place to implement all of them. They include the centering program that one of the proponents mentioned, the decrease in smoking program, safe sleep, which includes, for example, cribs for kids, and an increased usage of Bright Start. So if, and then also the nurse home visiting program. If we implement all of these programs, it's going to be hopefully a real impact on infant mortality. But if we also add this increased dollar amount and bring in more eligible mothers, we really won't be able to evaluate if the recommendations in the task force study worked. We'll never know. Did the money do it, or did all of these six good recommendations do it? So I believe that we should try what was discovered by this thoughtful process at first and see what it does. And perhaps if it doesn't accomplish our needs, we can next year look at increasing money to see if that would accomplish the needs. Secondly, I'm concerned about compliance. I think a number of the proponents mentioned that compliance is a problem here. And so I'm not sure making more women eligible at 175 or 200% of poverty is really the answer to this problem. My third consideration is that, as Senator Bradford said, Native Americans already have the free prenatal care, and Native Americans, that population is what brings our infant mortality up above the national average. And that's really clear in the infant mortality report that we received. So for all of those reasons, even though I feel kind of like a a bad person to do this. I just have to recommend that for now we move this bill to the 41st day.
Madam Chair. Thank you, Senator Kraus. Senator Krebs.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Senator Krause, for clarifying that. For those in the audience today, that there are specific goals and guidelines that the Infant Mortality Task Force has established, and the date that they want to achieve some of these goals are by 2015. So I think we're being premature and jumping the gun. Instead of putting money towards something, let's address the problem. And the number one problem is access, but also as far as infant mortality is smoking. And the goal specifically says we want to reduce the pregnant percent of women who smoke down from 18.5% to 15%. We want to increase the women who have access to their first trimester prenatal care, as our doctor stated, to 78% by 2015. The post-neonatality mortality they want to reduce. And then it's all goals set by 2015. But what they've established is working groups already. So with this money, instead of putting the money towards it, they've already have healthcare providers that have stepped up the plate. There are already hospital systems that have donated and matching funds for some of these programs. Tribal health has already been involved. There are many communities that are involved with the centering pilot project, as our testimony heard today. There are professional organizations, the Cribs for Kids that the First Lady has established. Our state government has initiated this process, as well as the task force members. There are two doctors, one of mine is a good friend, an OBGYN at Sioux Falls, that is going to be working on continuing these numbers. And so let's focus on these results so that we can reduce mortality, but not only that, is prevent some of the concerns of prenatal care, with that access being said, with smoking cessation, things like that. So I think it's a good start through 2012, 2013, and 2014 that we focus on this energy to reduce these areas. We can come back, see what they have as far as results and numbers, and let their task force, as they asked us to do, this task force asked us to let them do this work. And I think we have a fiduciary responsibility to do that.
Thank you, Senator Krebs. Senator Rampelberg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have taken a little different approach to it. I believe that as the bill is drawn, there are so many questions that I have in my mind, and there's plenty of mischief that could occur between how it is drawn and what could actually come out. One. Number two, I know right now our legislature this year is much more concerned about having legislative, maybe oversight, I don't want to call it control necessarily, but that might be construed that way, over the final program that might be coming out. And this is written very generally in that regard. I think that I really have some questions about the expanded eligibility that will be occurring in 2014 and how that might impact this. And I know that there were some, I think Rachel talked about this a little bit, but I'd sure like to see some more information. So my personal preference would be to approve it today with the idea that some additional information would come and perhaps some amendments that could be made that would address the issues that I see on it. However, I do hear the comments that my fellow senators have made, and I can't fault those either. But just to kind of send the message, it would be my intention today at least to give some support toward this whole process and giving it an opportunity to be tightened up a bit. So I will be voting against the motion. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator. Any other comments? Senator Krebs.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Further comment on that task force. We all heard the Infant Mortality Task Force that many of these task force members presented to us or here and took the time. I think it would be an insult to them if we didn't let them do their work and respond to their requests to work this through like they've asked us to. They worked hard this summer. They have specific guidelines. And not only that, our state government is going to be helping them financially in other areas to help implement this, along with partnerships in communities, tribal health, and hospital systems in our state. It would be an insult to them, and I know that coming from a task force member saying that to me personally, that we do ignore their work and just go forward with some other action, dismissing all that they've worked on with clear guidelines and goals to focus on rather just not a number, but an overall health and well-being of a mother.
Thank you, Senator Krebs. Senator Rampelberg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, I want to make it pretty clear that I absolutely agree with First Lady's task force's recommendations, and I actually feel very strongly that they must proceed, because I don't believe that this particular bill that we're talking about that's on the agenda today is going to address the issues that are rampant out there. And I believe that the task force mission will address those. I really do. I think, though, that there is a there are some people out there that are kind of falling between the cracks that are not part of the big problem, if you will. So I want to make it patently clear that I absolutely agree with what we approved and what they are requesting. I'm thinking that this is an adjunct to that, not in spite of that. And so I personally don't see this as any reflection upon that organization or what we've decided here. I really believe that this is a sidebar, perhaps, but is something that would address an issue that's out. Just as a sidebar. You know, guys, the average neonatal is going to be somewhere in that $500,000 to $700,000 each. If we can save four of those, we will break even. And that's what everyone is saying today, is that this thing, I think they made the case, we can save money in the long run by implementing something where we can save more kids. Unfortunately, fellow senators, this bill is not going to help necessarily bring more people in. The centering will, the smoking will, that's what's going to make the difference. But I think this will help more people take advantage of the care that's out there. And that's my intention on this. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Well, thank you for the discussion. I, too, will not be supporting this bill, and it's very difficult to do that. I think there's two tracks that are out there, and the one piece that hasn't been mentioned is the Medicaid work group, because in that work group, they did look at prenatal care and providing those services, and then you have Linda Dugard's work group that's working on the mortality rate of infants. Those two are paralleling each other, so that, you know, we have a lot of systems work there, and I think Dr. Wilson alluded to that, and I was moving to that in the sense that processes are in place, but the dots are not being connected. And I think these two work groups are trying to connect the dots so that the processes for dealing with and providing the access and working with the symptoms that we're dealing with prenatal care for, pardon the terminology, compliance for those moms to have a healthy baby, you've got to have that interaction and that interface with all the parties. And that's what this is trying to do. So in essence, if we're putting dollars out there to expand, but we're not looking at the integral pieces that are going to make the outcomes. What are we going to do to stop the moms from smoking, to do those things? And unless your providers are working with all the aspects out there, no matter what you do to expand, that's not going to bring down that rate of mortality deaths out there. So I think this is an option that could come, but at this time, let these parallel groups that are working together put those forces together, and let's look what that impact is on changing the behavior of those moms so that they can have healthy babies. And in the long run, you've got a live baby that has a wonderful life here in South Dakota, and it's not draining the resources that we currently have, but putting them to their best effort. Senator Schleckaway.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a quick comment. In the future, when we have a bill like this that's of vital importance, I, for one, would appreciate if the Department of Social Services would be in the room. I don't appreciate them being absent when they're all over the bill. I agree with the previous comments by my colleagues. I just wanted to get that on the record. because some of my questions were directly for them, and they're not in the room.
Thank you, Senator. With that, the motion before is to refer Senate Bill 121 to the 41st state. All those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye. Those opposed, nay. Secretary will call the roll.
Bradford?
No.
Holine?
No.
Krebs?
Aye.
Rampelberg?
No.
Schleckaway?
Aye.
Kraus?
Aye.
Hunhoff?
Aye.
Madam Chair, 4 ayes, 3 nays.
For today. It is not in vain. Certainly we'll continue to deal with that. With that, we will move to the next agenda item, and that is Senate Bill 125 that requires certain day care providers to mail notices of noncompliance.
Madam Chair.
Yes. Why? Why didn't they get a hold of you before?
I don't know.
Okay. First of all, is there anyone from out of town that was going to provide testimony on this bill, on Senate Bill 125 that was just up on the agenda? You're not going to be here. You can come back, sir. So you came specifically for this. All right. You know what, Senator? What we'll do is we'll have the hearing, but we will not take action.
Okay.
Okay, for the benefit of those people that are from out of town here.
Okay.
Is that okay? All right. So what we'll do is, because the senator has requested that there's maybe some additional work that is needed on this bill, and she's asking to defer, and what I, since we have out of town people here, we'll take the bill as it is, hear the testimony, but there will be no action on the bill, and we'll bring it back. Okay? Great. Thank you.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members of the committee. Senator Angie Buell from District 15 in Sioux Falls. I do have an amendment that's being distributed to Senate Bill 125. May I address both the amendment and the bill itself? Thank you, Madam Chair. I bring before you this morning Senate Bill 125, which is a bipartisan effort to provide for parental information about daycares. This bill came about after a tragic incident this summer at a home daycare in Sioux Falls. 18-month-old Meredith Ulmer was found not breathing at a daycare, having been left with inadequate supervision. Unbeknown to Meredith's parents, the daycare had been cited repeatedly by the city for having too many children and not enough staff. I've distributed a letter from Mrs. Ulmer, Meredith's mother, detailing exactly what happened to her daughter and encouraging your favorable consideration of Senate Bill 125. Obviously, nothing can fix the loss that the Ulmer family has experienced, but we as policymakers can take steps to make sure parents are able to make more informed choices for their children's care, with the goal of making daycare safer for children. Not long after this incident, I got a call from Representative Bob Dielstra, and we started talking about what might be done to prevent these situations in the future, understanding that notification was the important component. To that end, Senate Bill 125 would require that if a daycare is cited by either the Department of Social Services or a city that chooses to regulate daycares, since some do and some do not, the provider must then mail home a notice to the parents within 30 days explaining what the violation was and what's being done to correct it. I believe this strikes a great balance between parents having more notification at their disposal and more information without making it more likely that a daycare might suddenly close, which would provide an undue burden on providers. At that point, the parent may decide that the violation is serious enough to warrant them beginning to seek an alternative to daycare options, or they may decide that they're still comfortable with their children's care at that facility. In either case, they're then able to make a better informed decision about their children's care. With that, I respectfully request your favorable consideration of Senate Bill 125, and I will stand by for questions. We do have some other testifiers in the room that have more technical expertise than I do, so thank you.
Thank you, Senator. Any preliminary questions for the senator? Thank you.
I have one.
Senator Schleckway.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Buell, just for my clarification, what's the difference between a family daycare provider or a group family daycare home? Is there really a difference, or are they just two? Are they both home daycares, I guess, is what I'm asking?
They both could be, yes.
Okay.
That's my understanding, at least. There may be some other folks in the room that can help you out in that better.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Maybe if you need a better answer, we'll see if the other presenters have something that could. Thank you.
Thank you.
Other proponents? Any other proponents? Any proponents? All right. Any opponents then? Okay, go ahead.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, I'm Kim Malsom-Reist, and I'm here in opposition to Senate Bill 125. I do not know what the amendment actually does, so I will speak to the bill as it was introduced. This bill, as the proponent indicated, would require child care providers to mail notices to parents when there's an issue of noncompliance for either registration or licensure requirements. The bill also requires that those parents have to send that notice back as part of the notification process. First and foremost, please let me be clear that the department supports parents knowing about the quality of the child care that their children are receiving. That's why we actually have state legislation and rules that require that daycares already post their inspection reports that we give them. Any noncompliance issues have to be posted visibly for parents to be able to access, and we feel that that does an adequate job of informing parents of any licensure or registration issues if, in fact, they fall under the state guidelines. The other thing that I guess I would point out is that this bill would not impact the largest group of providers who are unregistered or unlicensed. So this would not have an impact on a very large number of providers. We would hate to see providers that do choose to become registered in particular to opt out of that option so that they would not have to conform with what this bill is intending to do. There's some logistical issues as we see it, requiring families to mail the notice back. If that were to be the way that we as a regulator, for instance, were to check to see if the facility actually mailed the notice, we know families are busy. We know things get lost. I've got a pile of mail at my house. You know, the timeliness with which families would be able to do that, and sometimes I think those things would just get missed. We wouldn't want to see providers penalized for those kinds of situations. Again, we appreciate what the bill is trying to do. We feel like we have an adequate system in place. And so with that, we would urge that you defer Senate Bill 125 to the 41st day.
Thank you, Madam Secretary. Any questions? Senator Krebs?
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is for Department of Social Services. Thank you for being here. A couple things. Clarification for everybody, I think, in the room, but also clarification for the members here. If it's under the number 12, I believe, 12 kids, children in a facility, then they do not have to be registered, correct? What's the number where they do not have to be registered? How many children can be in a facility where they do not have to be
up to 12?
Up to 12. Okay, mm-hmm. That's the number. I couldn't remember. And then the second part, may I, Madam Chair?
Go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Could you further clarify, Secretary Risen, the posting? I know that the facility, the provider, has to post mm-hmm. the inspection reports, but also I believe you said the noncompliance. Just further clarify that for all of us. And sure. What it states.
Sure. Thank you, Madam Chair, if I may. The administrative rule in this area speaks specifically to the different providers that must post in a visible location within the facility, a copy of the facility's latest inspection, any plans of correction, that are associated with noncompliance. And an inspection happens on a regularly scheduled basis and also on a complaint basis. So if we receive a complaint and we complete an investigation as a result, this would fall under this rule as well. So it's the actual documentation that we would provide the facility, and it's their plan of correction to fix whatever the issue was. The other thing I guess I would note is that these providers are also required to post our number so that folks can contact us with questions or, you know, if they have issues or complaints.
Madam Chair?
Go ahead.
Further question?
Go ahead.
Thank you. If they are required to post the plan of correction, mm-hmm. but do and are they required to post the complaint or if there is a complaint issued?
Madam Chair, that's a great question, Senator. The complaint itself is not part of what this rule pertains to.
Follow up again, Madam.
Go ahead.
Thank you. If they do not comply under administrative rule, the posting of the inspection and then the plan of correction, is there a penalty involved?
Madam Chair, absolutely. You know, just as any other licensure requirement that would not be met, we take progressive action to correct the issue, hopefully, and then obviously it kind of accelerates all the way up to revocation.
Any other questions? Okay. Thank you. Other opponents? Sir, you can come up. Welcome, and please identify. The green light should be on, and identify yourself to our listening audience.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Randy Stewart. I'm executive director of the Apple Tree Children's Centers in Sioux Falls, actually an organization founded by my mother 30 years ago next month. We employ approximately 150 people. We, depending on the time of year, care for between 600 and 700 children on any given day. And just to underscore what you've already heard from the Department of Social Services, there's already a mechanism in place that's pretty hard to miss. If there's an infraction, it is posted where the parents check in with their children, that there has been some kind of a violation, and they do have the number posted so that if they need further information, they can contact the department and find out exactly what that problem was. I would also suggest that any research into the child care industry would reveal that it is not a profitable undertaking. In 20-some years prior to going nonprofit, it was nonprofit anyway. My parents took one paycheck in 25 or 6 years, just to say they took one. And an example would be, you know, there, and I would defer to the department to explain the difference between major and minor infractions, but if I had one minor infraction in a year at each center, maybe something as, for instance, technically or in fact, if an inspector happened to show up at a classroom, a teacher simultaneously became sick and had to run to the restroom, that constitutes an infraction. That would cost my organization, one infraction per center, $5,000 per infraction. It'd be a quick way to get rid of child care in South Dakota. Child care providers just could not sustain that. And the practicality of getting people to respond to these letters is another huge problem. We fight very hard to stay in compliance. We have a hard time getting the medical histories of children, immunization records, that sort of thing. We can't get them to respond frequently to things that even involve their child. So not only do we not oppose this in spirit, it already, I believe, is in place and fairly effective. You don't like putting that red, trust me, the sign that we have to put up, that red sign that says there's been an issue, even if it's a very minor issue, is not something you ever want to have to post. So I again applaud the concern, but I think that there's a very effective mechanism in place that does not carry the financial onerous potential of this particular bill. Thank you very much.
Are there any questions? Okay, thank you very much. Are there any other opponents? Oh, did you have a question, Senator Bradford?
My question is,
okay, all right, we'll wait. We'll take this testimony, then I'll take, go ahead. Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the committee, Betty Oldenkamp. I am the CEO for Lutheran Social Services of South Dakota and lobbyist for the same. We operate a state-licensed infant toddler program, preschool and after-school programming in Sioux Falls. For all the same reasons that you've heard, we oppose this bill as it is redundant with what we already experienced with state licensure. However, we do appreciate the fact that Senator Buell brought this forward and support the concept of that transparency that is with it. And if there were a way for that to be extended to non-licensed facilities, would support that. It's just redundant with what we already do, adds additional cost. And with that, I would remain for questions.
Thank you. Any questions for Ms. Oldenkamp? Seeing none, thank you. Any other opponents? Okay. Secretary, do you want to come back since Senator Bradford has a question? Go ahead, Senator Bradford.
Thank you, Madam Chair. When you spoke about it, you said there's a lot of not be affected by this. Are they the non-licensured? Is that what you're talking about? Well, how without a license? Is there a, can you kind of explain this? Why they have no...
Madam Chair, thank you, Senator Bradford, for that question. There are different levels of either registration or licensure for child care facilities. They're dependent on size to some degree. They're dependent on kind of the arrangement, whether it's a daycare center or a family type of setting that the care is being provided in. And there are different options for, in particular, family daycare centers to register with the state or become licensed. There's requirements with each one of those phases, as you can imagine. But there's not a requirement that all family setting child care providers become registered or licensed. And so this bill obviously gets at providers that are, in fact, registered or licensed by the department, or in the case, as the sponsor indicated, of a city where there are some city ordinances that apply. That's who this bill would apply to. That leaves... you know, we would estimate about 1,300 daycare providers in the state that would not be affected by this bill because they're not they don't fall into these categories.
All right. Since there are no further testimony, I did tell Senator Buell to give her opportunity, so this will fall below the line. We'll continue the hearing and we'll address it on Wednesday then. All right. Thank you. With that, the rest of the bills that we have on today, I would entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved. Second.
Moved by Senator Rampelberg, seconded by Senator Schleckway. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. Motion carried. Thank you. We are adjourned.